Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Nice to be back.
Yeah, you're actually listening to us in recovery mode, although if you've been following closely, you'll know that we've actually have a couple of programs since the website went down, and thank goodness it's back up again, and we'll rebuild everything, I promise, and just going to take a certain amount of time and energy.
It takes a lot of time and energy.
But in the meantime, we had a backlog of just some great stuff.
So we're giving you, and we're going to speed up how often we give them to you, I believe.
Well, maybe, yeah. It just depends how much tolerance I have for the pain of producing programs. But okay. I expect.
Well, today's a fun one. It's called California Chefs.
Well,
and it's continuation of our grand time in Napa, Sonoma, and San Francisco.
So first up in today's program is a true culinary professional, Chris Cosentino, who you might think is a wild man because he has rather extravagant two-tone hair and rather a lot of tattoos, but it turns out he is a solidly grounded chef who got his start with an old favorite of Anne's called Jean-Louis Paladin.
I didn't know who you were talking about.
And Anne talked to Chris for quite a long time, close to the pass in the restaurant after
we
were having dinner.
I loved talking to Chris.
About what that experience had been like and all the fun times they had together. And we also talked to the manager of the hotel as well,
who's
Chris's
right.
partner. And they just do a wonderful job in a place, in a quiet residential suburban area called the Noe Valley. And I can't urge you enough to take advantage of the opportunity to take this recommendation. Go see Chris and Mark Pastore, the manager, and have a good time just like we did.
The smells as we entered the door of Encanto, this wonderful restaurant, were so overwhelming I can just hardly wait. But we're going to talk first to both the partners and chef. Chef Chris Cosentino, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Welcome to On the Menu.
Thank you for having me.
And also partner Mark Pastore. And Mark, do you cook too, or are you just a...
Only in emergencies.
Okay, but you can cook too.
That's what got me into this mess.
Yes. Uh-huh. Now here we are. I mean, it's a delightful space. It's in what district of San Francisco?
We're in the Noe Valley neighborhood. It's called Noe Valley.
Oh, okay. It's a new one to me. And you've been here 7 years, or the restaurant is 7 years?
I've been here since the restaurant opened in June of 2002.
Okay. And you were newer arrival?
I came on a year after. So
okay.
The restaurant opened with another chef, and I came in a year after.
When you've indicated already that the name means a lot of things, I said, aha, this is why it's called Encanto, because I saw the Divine Comedy on the wall, and a few other familiar, Dante and Beatrice and Inferno and a few others. But you said that actually it's deeper in meaning than that.
Well, we're seated in the Dante room right now,
okay,
which is Encanto's private dining room. And there are, in fact, a bust of Dante, one of Beatrice, and the complete text of the Divine Comedy on the wall.
In microscopic...
It's in about 5-point font.
5 point? I didn't even think that.
Quite small.
I would think 0.5, but go ahead.
And Encanto is an allusion to the theme of La Commedia, which is the search for divine love. And that's represented throughout the text often as Dante's search for his lost love, Beatrice, who had passed away 10 years before he wrote the Inferno.
What did she die from? I never understood.
She died from an influenza or some sort of illness, and she was only 24 when she passed on.
Oh,
yeah.
What's the connection to food?
So, okay, Peter, who doesn't have a microphone, is talking in the background. That we're going to ask Chef Chris to tell us what the connection between Encanto, Dante, Beatrice, and food. What are those? What's that connection? Punt.
Go for it, Mark.
Well, really the connection is that to run a restaurant in this day and age, you have to have a great deal of passion, which Dante had, but it helps if you're a little bit crazy as well. And I think Dante had a lot of that as in addition.
Yeah, but you've held up 7 years. That's a pretty good sign.
We're beating the averages.
Now, you're both what do we call them? You're not native Californians.
No, definitely not.
You were from Rhode Island?
Born and raised in Rhode Island, yes.
And went to school at Johnson & Wales?
I did a four-year program at Johnson & Wales, 2 years of culinary, and then second 2 years got a Bachelor of Science in Food Service Management.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. And how did you end up in California? You were in D.C. with our friend Bob Kincaid.
Well, when I was in D.C., at the time, there wasn't a lot of local farmers markets, and everything that was coming into the restaurant, unless it was fish, said California on the box.
Okay.
That was all the produce. Majority of the wines, California-based. So I was kind of at this crux in my career. Do I go to New York or do I go to California? And my wife now, and at the time my girlfriend, Tatiana, said, you know, San Francisco's beautiful. Let's go there. 6 months later, we're in a car driving across country.
Ah, it's a wonderful story.
I'd never been here. I came
You'd
blind.
You'd never even seen it.
Nope, I came blind.
Oh, and you loved it.
I left once for a year and opened up a restaurant on Martha's Vineyard called The Coach House with Drew Neimport.
It was a Marriott restaurant.
I opened that up. It was in Edgartown at the Harborview Hotel. And I was there for one season and came running back.
Okay. And your story?
Well, strangely enough, Chris and I grew up about 60 miles away from each other. I grew up in southeastern Connecticut. I was born in New London, but lived in Lyme, in Old Lyme, Connecticut. So Chris and I have a lot of childhood food memories, even though we didn't know each other. We have a lot of common childhood foods that we grew up eating, baked stuffed clams and
Lobster rolls and
oh, fantastic. Yeah.
Fried belly clams.
Yeah, fried clams and fantastic corn and tomatoes that you get in New England.
For like 1 month.
And so how did you end up then here?
Well, Mark? I moved here when I was 18 to go to college.
Okay.
And as my grandmother, who is a lifetime Philadelphian, put it, she told my mother that the entire country is tilted to the west and all the nuts and fruits roll to California.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good observation.
Yeah. So you arrived here. Now, do you have like a website that people could check out before they come here?
Yes, you can take a look at the restaurant, the decor, as well as the menu on encanto.biz, as in business.
Right. And now you said you have to really dash off to the kitchen because you put in on so many different, so many new dishes that you've got to have tasted, right? You change this menu daily.
The menu changes according to what's available from the farms. So today we have 8 new dishes on the menu today.
Eight new dishes.
A lot. That's a lot, but you know, it's what the way I like to run the kitchen. I feel that the more you change, you order smaller, things stay fresher, and it's a lot more fun not only for the staff but for the customer.
Now, do you personally go to farmers markets, or do you have relationships with farmers?
I have both.
Okay.
So I do go to the farmers market every week. I go to the Ferry Plaza every Saturday, but I also have really strong relationships. I also go to the farmers market now on Tuesdays as it's ramped up. And a lot of the farmers that I work with, I've had relationships with for many, many years, some of them which I treat as family.
Tell me some of the specialty items that are farmer-initiated.
Well, right now, it kind of changes all the time, but right now we're doing trofie. Are you familiar with trofie?
No.
Trofie is a little pasta. It's a little twisted noodle pasta. It's thick in the middle.
Oh, okay.
It almost looks like little tiny chopsticks. But we're doing a riff on a very traditional Genovese-style pasta. It is traditionally done trofie with pesto, potatoes, and green beans. But instead, we're doing ramp pesto with morels and potatoes.
It's a season,
so
right.
Taking everything back to the earth. So you have three very hearty, two foraged, one, and all of which come from the dirt. Today we're doing sand dabs with oysters and asparagus and sorrel.
That sounds fabulous.
And
sand dabs, I mean, they're so overlooked. Nobody even serves them anymore.
Well, they're a San Francisco
classic.
But they're
more expensive now than they used to be when I was growing
Everything's
up.
Everything's more expensive than it's used to be, and it's never going to change. You know, time moves forward, prices go up. Scarcity, availability. We're also going to be doing a grilled beef heart tonight with warm marinated mushrooms. So we have a variety of like 10 or 12 different mushrooms that I've pickled and marinated. So we warm them up, serve them with a really beautiful grill.
Do you forage or you deal with a forager?
I deal with a forager. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to forage.
Yeah.
That's the bummer.
Yeah. we were just someplace where the chef, we couldn't meet with him until the following day because he got 15 pounds of morels.
You know, that'd be great if I had the luxury to go out. But
no, when Chris first started in Kanto, we did go out and forage in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we always get wild fennel, freeway fennel, wild fennel. There's actually borage growing across the street where I can go get borage blossoms every day. And we have a rooftop garden, which we go, and if you consider that foraging, we go to the roof and pick salad burnet and nepotella in a varieties of different mints and times. So it's really nice to have those things right at the tip of your fingers so you can play all the time, but don't always have that playful ability to run out and go hide in the mushroom woods for a couple hours.
Well, do you skew your menu in some direction? Like, are you really big on greens and veggies or meats or seafood?
We're pretty, I would say we're very meat-centric here.
Meat-centric, okay.
But we do have a large variety of vegetarian options, tons of different fish. Like, for instance, today we're doing a crudo of mackerel.
I saw that.
With vanilla salt, fresh Albion strawberries, and green almonds.
I might have to. I like all those ingredients, but I can't picture them together.
Well, you have a fatty fish. You have an acidic strawberry. You have a little bit of vanilla, which always accentuates strawberries. And then there's your salt. And then you have these green almonds, which are still gelatinous.
I love having
all these flavors that balance it out.
Well, we're going to have to try that one, I think. What's your favorite new thing?
Favorite new thing?
Yeah.
That's kind of hard.
Okay, tell me this. How receptive is this clientele? Will they try almost anything? I mean, you could run through nettle soup on the menu and nobody questions it.
There's not really much fear when people come here. People,
they just know it's going to be good.
Well, as time has gone on, people have kind of expected more eccentric items on our menu here, more unique meat cuts, more off cuts. People are not so afraid to expect something a little different from us here.
We were at one restaurant, we had a combination. We had fried tripe salad, pork heart, and a beef tongue.
I'm actually known as the offal king of the United States. So to me, those actually are very common items
here.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, I think
you know, right now we're doing chicken liver and foie gras pate, which is extremely tame. But, you know, we have a dish on the menu right now called pea brain, which is calves' brains with peas and tarragon.
Pea brain, that's very funny. Do you get to name mark some of these things?
Chris is a font of creativity, both in the kitchen and linguistically.
So, when what is your strength in this relationship, this partnership?
I can definitely say that Mark's the brains and I'm the brawn, and I'm very comfortable with that.
Yeah, I'll leave it to somebody else to say what my strengths and weaknesses are, but I come to restaurants from having been in a corporate career for 15 years.
And like what? What did you do?
I was in Silicon Valley, and I ran a couple small technology companies.
Okay.
But I've had a lifelong passion for Italian food and spent a fair amount of time in Italy. And when I came back from Italy the first few times, I realized I wasn't able to eat the kind of foods that I was had found there. I was eating Italian-American food.
Yeah.
So I became, I started a love affair with cookbooks and cooking at home. And really, my knowledge of Italian cuisine grew in part through travel in Italy and in part through travel through Italian cookbooks.
What's your favorite part of Italy? Or that's another favorite question, not a good one, I guess.
Probably Campania. That's where my family comes from. My father and I took my grandfather there.
Oh, that would be fun.
18 years ago for his 80th birthday.
Ah, what
and
fun.
And it was the first time he'd been back to the village where he grew up in 65 years.
Oh, geez.
And
it
was a magical trip. It was really incredible.
And he still had relatives there?
There was his great aunt, Gioconda, who at the time was 96.
Ah, geez.
And she had two teeth, one upper, one lower. And
we call those summer teeth. Some are good, most are bad.
And then her son and daughter and daughter-in-law were there, and all the women were named Maria. And so we had the three Marias. We called them all, they were all Maria. And my family name, Pastore, is the Italian word for shepherd.
Yes.
And so sure enough, when we arrived, they were out tending to their flock of sheep in the pasture. So, and I've gone back to Campania several times, and all parts of Italy are beautiful, but it's particularly important to me.
Yeah, that connection with your roots is unbelievable. Yeah. Well, anyhow, what else should people know about coming here? We sort of talked around the fact that it's an Italian restaurant, but it's an Italian restaurant with a California attitude and a lot of creativity and a big dose of humor, I gather.
Well, I mean, the food itself is based in very, very traditional old world technique. It's not really Californianized very much. I try to, you know, Mark said something many years ago, which was that we're in a region of Italy called California. And any great Italian chef, no matter what region they're in, will focus on the ingredients that are available at hand. They're not going to ship stuff in from everywhere. Occasionally, we bring in a fish that we like from the East Coast, because I hate to say it, I miss East Coast fish a lot. But, you know, when you could focus on what's here right around you and you manipulate things to fit into that mold, then you really are working those particular regions of Italy. And we're very all-encompassing. There's nothing just one particular region. To me, is really important. So we'll fluctuate up and down. Like right now, we have a very Northern Alto Adige style dish, which is sausage, smoked fish, potatoes, and horseradish.
Sounds good.
That's like bordering, you know, up in the north. And yeah. It's very rich and deep. And it traditionally, they would smoke a river fish, but we're, of course, using an oily, you know, saltwater fish instead. But it gives you more of a depth to the food. Yes, it's local, but at the same time, it's that region of Italy that it needs to be.
Well, how difficult is it getting in here? Is it reservations? Are they tight?
Mark?
Well, Encanto is at its heart a neighborhood restaurant.
Okay.
And we are, if somebody's visiting San Francisco, we are not downtown. We are not in the city center. We're in a wonderful residential neighborhood, Noe Valley. And our first mission is to serve our neighborhood. So we're a relatively casual restaurant. We're fairly big for the neighborhood. We have 110 seats.
That is
and,
for the neighborhood,
We have seating for 16 just in our wine bar. We serve a menu there. So we recommend reservations, but if you don't have a reservation, it's almost never a problem to walk in and if you're a party of one or two or three or to sit in our wine bar and have a wonderful meal there.
Party of eight, make a reservation. Logical.
Well, I can't thank you enough for Peter has a question.
Well, we are in California, which is a region of Italy, as Mark just mentioned. You mentioned earlier that the wine program is very heavily focused on your family's native land and Chris's. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. Our wine program, when we opened 7 years ago, I would say most American wine drinkers, if they knew Italian wines, they knew Piedmont and they knew Tuscany. And one of the things we believe is that Italian wines do go fantastically well with Italian food. And we also believe that over the last 20, 30 years, there's been a renaissance in quality winemaking in Italy. And so we decided sometimes you can find California wine anywhere in San Francisco, anywhere in the United States. And it really opened up a world for us to focus almost exclusively on Italian wine and try to represent quality wines from all over Italy, from all 21 regions.
So, Chris, are there any unusual regions that you particularly like?
Of what? The wine or the food?
Yeah, of wine. I mean, we just met a winemaker from Calabria. And he said Calabria has a whole new generation of winemakers. So instead of sending their grapes to Piemonte to make the Barolo stronger, instead they're bottling it themselves. I think Ippolito 1886 was the name of the winery that we met, and it had been in the son's family for five generations. Do you have any places like that you really like?
You know, for me, ultimately, I kind of leave that into Edward's hands. He does an amazing job of pairing the wine with the food. And I kind of go along Edward's recommendations. I'm definitely far from a wine aficionado. I am very fond of beer that's coming out of Italy right now called Nora, which is a 750 large format, which is... And it's a very unique style of beer in that they're using some wine techniques in the preparation of the beer, aging it in wine barrels. So it's a different style. But for me, wine-wise, you know, I really leave that up into Edward's hands.
Now, Edward is a sommelier.
Edward's our wine director, yes.
Who's not sitting with us, but I'm sure we'll make his acquaintance later.
He's wandering around.
He's wandering around somewhere. So we'll catch him and make him do a little work for us later on. I'm sure he can help us.
If I could interject, part of what's exciting to us about Italian wine is that In the world of winemaking, Italy is second only to France in terms of volume of wine produced each year, but it's far ahead of any other country in terms of the variety of wine that's produced. You find more than 1,100 different grape varietals from which wine is commercially produced in quantity. And across Italy's 21 regions, you find a huge variation in geography and climate. And of course, then there's the Italian character, which is at its core anarchist. And you'll find people in this literally in the same village who are applying completely different winemaking styles to the same grapes. And so you find a variety of wines that you won't find anywhere else in the world.
I'm going to have to bail.
Yeah, Chris and I were just signaling each other because we know Chris has to go off in the kitchen. Otherwise there'll be no dinner.
I've got a giant cod I have to butcher right now.
Otherwise, there'll be no fish for anybody, including us.
Yes, exactly.
So thank you so much for talking to us. I hope we'll catch you later before we
definitely.
Go.
Thank you very much.
Now, we went to a wonderful wine event in New York put on by the Italian Trade Commission. And, everybody was there. It was really wonderful, including a friend of ours from Le Marche, from Abruzzo, who is doing this total organic thing where all the grapes are moved by gravity, and you know, her wines are very unusual.
So she's a biodynamic producer then?
Well, yeah. I don't know if she went that far.
I would think you would just call it totally primitive. Basically, she picks grapes from a block, and she makes a wine out of the grapes from that block, and she says, my wines represent what the grapes are like. I just let them show through, which sounds like a rather risky endeavor, but so far she seems to be quite successful. And I think she just has a feel for it, and a peculiarly Italian view that, somebody said anarchist, says, I can do this, so why won't I just go about it?
It sounds very un-American.
Now, Mark, is there anything else that our listeners should know about the restaurant that you just want to mention?
Well, I think Encanto is a restaurant that has a very particular and very strong point of view. And we have a point of view certainly about wines and the wines that are appropriate for our cuisine. But our menu has its own particular point of view as well. And some people say that dining out is about pleasure. Some people say it's about adventure. And we would say that dining out should be about both of those things. But I think the best experience that you can have at Encanto is if you agree that dining out can be about submission as well.
All right. I'm up for that. Can't wait. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so we're about to submit, and we look forward.
It's great to have both of you here.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. And now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. You're looking at our website, supposedly, but also email us on the menu at onthemenuradio.com. Visit us on onthemenuradio.blogspot.com.
Well, the greatest thing is all you have to do is say, use your method of choice, and there's a button right on the website.
Exactly.
It'll put you straight into Facebook if you want to be there, straight into Blogspot if you want to be there.
And also
and
into
straight
Twitter.
Into Twitter, which is where the Twitterer in this household seems to spend an inordinate amount of time.
Exactly.
And I'm sure you'll all have a lot of fun there. And in the meantime, back to business.
Yes,
back to San Francisco.
Not
exactly San Francisco. First of all, Napa Valley, and then San Francisco. We'll put these two chefs together. First up is Michael Chiarello, who's been around the dining scene in the valley for a long time, and is now plying his trade at a restaurant called Bottega,
which is called Very Hot.
And then he also has a wonderful store across the parking lot called Napa Style. And he's got his fingers in lots of pies, and he's a lovely man to talk to, and we really enjoyed the atmosphere of his place. And then almost a contemporary, I guess, Gerard Heugoyen has been on the program just a few weeks ago because we talked to him about his book about Basque cuisine.
Yeah.
But we couldn't resist the temptation being in San Francisco to go back and taste some in person once again, as we had done before. He joined us briefly to give us a preview of what we were going to have that evening, which of course we enjoyed enormously. So here's Michael Chiarello, followed by Gerard Higoyan.
Sometimes, actually, many, many times, On the Menu gets to meet really nice guys. And we just found a new one. Michael, welcome to On the Menu.
Oh, thank you, Anne. It's a pleasure to be here today.
We were sitting Michael Chiarello, we're sitting in his new restaurant. I mean, new as of, like, just in December 2008, called Bottega, and it's a gorgeous restaurant, Michael.
Thank you very much.
It looks bigger than what it is. How many do you seat?
We have 90 seats in here, but at my age, you know, I could have probably fit another 25 seats, but who needs them?
Right. I get that one. Now, you have an interesting background. I mean, you're basically classically trained, but your heritage is Italian. Your parents were immigrants, you said. Tell us a little bit. You studied all over. You had a different restaurant, but something was tugging on your heartstrings.
Yeah, classically trained, ethnically raised.
Okay, that sums it up.
You know, my family's from Calabria, from southern Italy, and Calabria's a really interesting region. It's a very poor region, financially, but very rich in culinary heritage and great stories and storytelling and great producers of product. When you're these cucina poveres, these poor cuisines have a lot of heart soul to them. So we grew up in the Calabrese fashion. So 10 days after 2 inches of rain, we were mushroom hunting. And if we gathered more mushrooms than we could eat, then we were drying them and canning them and pickling them and putting them up. So this whole sustainable cycle of life was really a big part of what we did, from whether it's watercress to mushrooms to trout fishing to salt curing sardines to prosciutto, salamis, olive oil, vinegar making, wine making. Because, you know, for us, if we had a bad vintage of wine, we were vinegar makers.
That's cool.
So I grew up in a way where we didn't have any money. My father was disabled when we were really young. We didn't have a lot of money, I should say, but we entertained ourselves lavishly by the things that we gathered and the relationships we had, whether they're chicken farmers, goat farmers, rabbit farmers.
And you were born.
I was born here, yeah.
Yes.
Native Californian.
Native, which
one of the few non-blonde Native Californians.
Yes. And how big was your family? Just I had
there are three boys. Uh-huh. I'm the baby.
Oh, now that's a good place to be in an Italian family. Baby
I have
son.
I have a brother, an Irish twin brother, that's 18 months older than me.
Oh, yeah?
And then I have another brother, 12 years older than me. So I got a really nice spread.
Now, do you do all those things in your restaurant here?
Yes. You know, we have a Sala Maria at my Napa Style store, which is our flagship store to this retail business I started, that's right across the way. And so I cure all of the meat for the property right here. So prosciuttos, salamis, bresaola. Soppressata, all of these things are done here, and they're all done organically because I'm kind of a dyed-in-the-wool, sustainable organic farmer with my winery, but also the same thing here with what we produce on property.
And the name of your winery is?
Oh, Chiarello Family Vineyards.
Okay.
So, you know, this is a, so we make mozzarella, we make olive oil, we make all these vinegars still, all these prosciutto, certainly all of the pastas. This is a cuisine that's based out of your hand. For the
most part.
Sounds
just fabulous.
Thank
actually.
You.
You actually do still cook then. I mean, you also, you have a cookbook that's about a year and a half old.
At Home with Michael Chiarello is my sixth book.
Okay, you have six books. You've done lots and lots of television, have you not?
I have, more television than I deserve.
And actually, you have a new series. We just
finished a series called Top Chef Master.
And means what? Old chefs?
For us, old chefs. The chefs at a stage of their career where they're not competing against each other, they're competing with each other.
Oh, that's a good way of putting
it. And it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful series. I can't tell you who wins or how far I go. But
and
we
it's
had a wonderful.
Air PBS.
It starts June 10th on Bravo.
Oh, Bravo! That's right.
This Top Chef
that.
Show is the number one show of its genre in the world.
So you're a contender in the show.
I am a contender.
And you know the answer, but you
I do. Do I look soft though? Like I go down in the first round? I don't know. I'm gonna have to leave that up to you.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. This is like a cliffhanger.
It is.
Listeners, we will certainly put on the air as soon as Mike can tell us.
Good.
But he's probably not allowed to tell us even.
I'm not. They
even,
put me in
even,
jail.
Even 5 minutes before it goes out.
Exactly.
Chocolates. You had an interesting. Before I do that. I want to emphasize that with all this other activity, you still cook. You were walking around with a big bowl of fresh basil.
Yeah, I cook every day. I cook every single day. I start my day in the kitchen, and I cook dinner service every night, except Sundays. Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays, I cook lunch and dinner service. And
you're a real phenom, my
You know, I wanted to have... I had 8 restaurants when I got out of the restaurant business in 2000.
And
eight. And I ended up they were just running businesses. I didn't get a chance to be the chef that I wanted to be.
Do, yeah.
So when I left Trevina and all my restaurants and various things and Consorzio Olive Oil I started, we had an olive oil company, we had this catering business, we had restaurants. I didn't get a chance to finish my craft, so I took a break from restaurants. I started a retail business called Napa Style, which is a national catalog business, and we have a half a dozen stores in California, and the flagship one right here in Yountville, in the middle of the wine country. And I really wanted, and I bought in 1997 20 acres in the Napa Valley, and I wanted to, and 10 of those acres were 97-year-old vineyards. They were 87-year-old vineyards then, and I wanted a chance to tend some of these old vines to get my farming duds back on. I grew up in ranching family and really wanted to, if it's one thing to proclaim organic, it's another thing to make your livelihood farming organically and to make wines that are sustainably farmed. So I really wanted to know it, not know how to grow great fruit for fantastic California wine organically, and to be able to talk about the honest trials and tribulation of being an organic farmer and what that's like, because they're very difficult choices for farmers today.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it be conventional or organic. Why they say conventional when we use chemicals, I don't know, but, but conventional versus organic. And so that was a great experience, and I had a chance to do my television, be on the road quite a bit, develop all the product for Napa Style. We design cookware and furniture and food products, and so I get a chance to travel the world and do that. I couldn't do that and own my restaurants and be on television and be there to serve you at the same time, so I chose not to.
So you just consciously chose to get cooking again.
If I can't, I'm a servant. I'm a servant of my guests, and if I can't serve you in the way I was bred to serve, I'm not willing to. So I stopped. And when I got back in, I wanted to get back in with one restaurant and let my friends be jealous that I have just one. and to finish my craft and finish the schooling of my craft. Bottega is a workshop where a wannabe master might go to perfect their craft. Young students will work with a more mature artist in hoping to get their chops. So it really was my workshop to step back into in a place that I could really finish what I started when I got out. I think I was probably 38 or 39. That sounds young to me now.
Yeah, tell me that. Now, you described your style as
micro-regional Italian.
I've never ever heard that. Is that
not the entire menu. Some of these are just Italian inspired through my own eyes. But if we're doing we have a fish stew, an Adriatic fish stew that's from that was learned from a village in Puglia, not all of Puglia, just one village in Puglia, one very specific way, not influenced by any other village or any other thing. So I'm really trying to maintain the truth in a dish and trying not to step over it with myself at the same time. But there's plenty of dishes that are inspirations to me that start in this little village in Puglia and finish somewhere else in my heart. But certainly rustic Italian cuisine.
Great. Now you're going to do a tasting menu for us tonight, and why don't you whet our appetites by telling us some of the items that just describe them. People love listening to food descriptions.
Well, I think, you know, we make a prosciutto, an organic prosciutto that starts with a Berkshire ham that's fed wild chestnuts for 4 months. We cure it with fleur de sel from Brittany. It really is, I think, the first ham I've ever seen that's cured with a world-class salt.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that.
No, I don't think it's genius, but there's only two ingredients to ham, prosciutto or cured ham, right? Yeah. The pig and the salt.
Yes.
So, you know, God forbid we try better salt. And we did, and they're spectacular. So I'm going to serve you a little, some of our house cured prosciutto that's 18 months with a little pasta frita, a little focaccia cooked in olive oil, tossed in a little Reggiano, crispy, with some Lambrusco, a little sparkling red wine from the Veneto with it. It's a traditional Parmigiano way, an old Parmigiano way of serving the prosciutto and the pasta frita together. So you'll get a taste of that. I'm sure you'll taste some octopus with salsa verde that we grill on the wood grill that's to die for. We make some burrata, creamy filled mozzarella on some Meyer lemon and olive oil braised artichokes.
Yes, I mean, you're getting into the California ingredients now that you couldn't do any of the stuff without.
Exactly. I think we do a crudo, which is our kind of sashimi that we serve on a Bhutanese salt brick that we keep frozen. So 200.
Do that in Sardinia?
You see it in Sardinia, yeah, where you see them on chunks of salt where the crudo is served right on it. So they're unseasoned. They just get the seasoning from the brick that we serve them on. I don't know what accompaniment I'll do with your crudo, but it's big eye tuna and it's beautiful. I saw it come in today. You might have some polenta under glass. We have this
under
Venetian
glass.
Polenta, this ancient pre-Columbus polenta that was discovered. There were only 150 pounds grown in America this year. We got 100 pounds of it. It is by far the best ingredient in polenta I've ever tasted. So we're going to serve it under glass with a little twill of Parmigiano, some roasted wild mushrooms, and a balsamic rabbit sauce with that. And you'll open the glass and eat it.
You're making me totally so fun.
I'm sure you'll have a green eggs and ham, a dish actually created for my son, my baby boy. Not for him, but I was reading Dr. Seuss and, you know, would he, could he, with a,
yeah.
After he's my fourth kid, so I knew the book by rote, and so I was starting to dream, what would this be if it was a dish? You know, could it be a dish? And so it's a confit of asparagus with a soft cooked egg that are tossed in breadcrumbs, made crispy in olive oil, served on top of this confit of asparagus, a little cambazola fonduta, and then prosciutto bits, like bacon bits, but made with prosciutto.
Prosciutto.
So green eggs and ham.
Sounds fabulous.
Huh? We'll do a bite of gnocchi, probably a little pappardelle. Beautiful lamb dish we have with cherries that just came in season yesterday. I think you're going to have a good ride.
I think we're going to have an absolutely spectacular time.
Don't snack too much.
I haven't even had anything since breakfast.
Good,
that's okay.
Good.
Except my green tea. Right. So is there anything that people should be expecting when they come to this restaurant that you haven't talked about yet? I mean, you've nice outdoor dining.
We have beautiful outdoor dining.
We're in a private wine room.
All the wines temperature controlled that we serve. All of our bottled wines brought cellar
California
temperature.
Or Italian?
California and Italian. Mostly Napa. That's been extraordinary wine for me to go out of county. All of our wine is priced 2x markup. Restaurants are traditionally 3.5, 3, 4. Okay. So there's a great wine value. It allows them to trade up without trading up in quality, without trading up in price, and that's very, very successful here. We have a Cortino program rather than wines by the glass. It's a quarter liter, so you get a glass and a half, which is great and working really, really well. And I think what you'll find is a true sense of wanting to serve the guests when they come here, to throw the party and to really open up our hearts so people feel they're at home when they're here.
Now, if you've mastered this whole thing and it's your dream, what will you do next?
Oh, there's no. I'm only the beginning of here. This is about 65% of where it'll go. It'll take me 4 or 5 years, and my job isn't to sit here and to cook every dish. My job is to continue to bring to the kitchen, to the team, evolve food with great stories and helping people discover this difference between taste and flavor. There are a lot more talented cooks than I across the street between Thomas Keller's group and all that they do over here, tremendously talented. What we're good at is storytelling with food, and that's where the flavor comes in.
Oh, I love that. That's
you know, beautiful. If I can tell you the story of a dish before you eat it, it's going to taste twice as good if it's prepared well.
I can't wait, Michael, and it's been a real pleasure, a joy to meet you in person, and I look forward to seeing you again tonight with food in hand.
Good. I look forward to cooking for you guys. It'll be my honor. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. And Peter, thank you.
Now, when we interviewed the chef before, we promised that we would get back to him in his restaurant and have him describe his food. We're talking to Gerard Hirigoyen, and we're at Piperat, which is one of his two restaurants. He is French Basque, and he has a very exciting menu. He's going to tell us about this, because he's going to set up what we eat. Now tell everybody what exactly we're going to eat.
Okay, well, we're gonna have a nice little menu here. We're going to make some little portions right here, and we're going to call it tonight the Basque Laundry. Let's put it this way.
The Basque Laundry.
So we're going to make some small little plate for you, and I think we're going to start. What I like to start tonight, we probably we have a little, what we call a wild mushroom open pie, and we're using a hen of the wood mushrooms with that.
I love them.
Yes, and with a little pine nuts and a little Moscatel wine reductions.
Wow.
We're going to have, of course, our ham and cheese terrine, which is a layer of ham and cheese all put together and sauté quickly at the last minute. We're going to have that. I'm thinking about, there's many things, and it's going to be done probably at the last minute also. But what I love is probably before that, we're going to have the house cured bacala with the oysters.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, we do it ourselves over here with the lemon creme fraiche. And if you want to throw in a little veggie, of course, asparagus has been the season right now. We did a sort of tarragon mousseline, or, you know, we didn't want to call it spuma, but it is a very light mousseline. So we have that. And, you know, we have also our traditional piquillo pepper, stuff with goat cheese. And, you know, one of my favorite is the calamari a la plancha with fennel.
Oh, wonderful.
And a little olive and capers and coriander salpico. So that would be for the little appetizers. I'm going to have to choose from, I don't know, you guys can have all of that, but we're going to have quite a few of those. And then if we want to go into the big plates, which, you know, some are great here. The Pacific rockfish, actually, very sort of traditional Spanish style, Basque style, fried garlic vinaigrette, which is very good, light, very light and very flavorful. The Alaskan halibut, which we like to do this season with the pit end rolls and fava beans, peas, and sort of citrus and café lime bouillon, which is very good also. One thing, one of my favorite these days is probably the lamb chops. Also, we make a little house-made merguez with the braised fennel.
Oh, wow.
Confit au potato and some Moorish spice relish that we make here at the house. And, of course, we have our little duck with the little sun shocks and huckleberry sauce.
Ah! And what kinds of wines go with this?
Oh, the wines. We're going to have plenty of wines. We have, you know, what we're going to do tonight, probably, we're going to try some of the French side of the Basque region white. You know, we have a great white wine from the Basque region, actually made by a great winemaker from France who used to make the wine at Chateau Petrus. His name is Jean-Claude Berouette, and that's from his wine from his property. It's called Hérémina. It's an Irulegui. It's made out of the Petit Mansin, Grand Mansin grape. It's a very... kind of like a varietal gray, very dry, bone dry, very good. Has a nice long finish also. And we can have the red from him, which is a Cabernet Franc, which is kind of unusual because mostly what you find in Irulegui is tannat. But he discovered supposedly then the original grape of the region is Cabernet Franc and not necessarily tannat. So that's all open for discussion. But we can have some of that. Or we can go to the Spanish side and splurge in some of the grape Rioja also.
Well, listeners, in case you haven't got this, I mean, if you want something out of the ordinary and exceptional, this is the place to go. We followed this chef for quite a long time, and we're very excited to be here. Thank you for having us.
Good. Let's have a great meal.
All right. And now it's time to take another break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back.
Here we are again.
Yeah, and one of the wonderful things about San Francisco, reflected in the next interview and some others which are yet to follow, is that there always seems to be a new generation of chefs coming along. And we had the opportunity to catch up with one of those during our visit, and here she is.
I always love interviewing women chefs. There aren't enough of you. Hello, Michelle Ma.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, we're at your restaurant is very young, only, like you said, just over a month old,
yes.
Called Midi.
Midi.
And we're right in downtown, and it's in a hotel. What hotel are we in?
It's part of the Galleria Park Hotel.
Okay, and that's new too?
Actually, it's been around for a while.
Okay. So, but this restaurant is a great venture, but you have to do 3 meals a day, right?
Yes. 3 meals a day, and we have some banquet space as well, and then room service for 177 rooms.
Yeah, but you're young and energetic, right?
Exactly.
Before we started on air, we talked a little bit about your background. You were born in Korea, but came to California when you were 3 months old.
3 years old.
Oh, 3 years old, I meant. I was thinking a month of the rest. 3 years old. And your mother and grandmother cooked up a storm. Mm-hmm. But you branched out into other cuisines even as a young lady.
Yes.
You ventured into, what, beach, studies of beaches.
I needed to get away.
But eventually hit on things culinary and went to the Culinary Institute in San Francisco. Hmm?
Yes, I went to CCA.
Yes, and you've never lived on the East Coast.
No.
Now, how would you describe what you're cooking now? It's not Korean, obviously.
No, I would say it's California French, you know, New American. It's always hard to kind of describe food.
I hate asking the question. I just wanted to give some idea of what to expect. I mean, in a place called Midi, you're pretty sure that you're going to encounter French somewhere in there.
Yes.
In fact, we were greeted. It was perfect on cue. As we walked in the door, it was a whole couple tables of people speaking French.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So now, you've been around, though, even though you're very young. In fact, you in 2006 won Rising Star Chef through the
San Francisco Chronicle.
San Francisco Chronicle, thank you. Yes. And you're about to tell us, like, some of the places you worked, but particularly in respect to who were your mentors. It's hard. Now, San Francisco is better than most other cities because there are a lot more executive chefs here.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of places. There aren't any. but you've had some particular mentors. Who might they be?
You know, definitely Emiko Gubbins was my first chef that I worked with in San Diego at Cafe Japango. She definitely showed me, or allowed me into her kitchen and showed me just the trials and, you know, the hard work that's necessary to really be in the business. And she really wanted me to be sure about whether or not I wanted to get into this business before spending all my money to go to school.
Okay, so that's what you did.
So I worked there first, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the atmosphere. I enjoyed the work, being around and, like, environment and the people who were all involved. And then my other biggest influence, I would say, would be Paul Ehrenstam. I worked with him over at Grand Cafe, and he definitely helped fine-tune my palate, I would say.
Uh-huh. So. But you do the whole gamut. You do desserts. You do everything.
Yes, huh? I do everything here.
And you'd say that, have you traveled other places?
I have traveled. Mostly to Asia. I've been to Bali, Korea. Definitely love to go to Europe and just travel the world, but obviously there's always a lot of college debt that you have to pay off.
Still have that, do you?
I finally paid it off, but just last week, actually.
Oh, no, that's cause to celebrate. Yes. Did you celebrate?
Yeah, I had a little champagne.
And then back to work, huh?
And then back to work, yes.
It used to be that women chefs in San Francisco were an ideal environment, work environment, because they founded the Women Chef and Restaurateurs with some of the chefs from New York. But there was a community here. Is that still here? They all got very busy and kind of moved on, didn't they?
I feel like there's still a very high concentration of female chefs here. But at the same time, the younger generation of female chefs is still kind of a little behind. For a while, I feel like there were so many of them, and you know, it was great. It made me feel comfortable being in the kitchen and just knowing that I could attain that success.
But or I just call up anybody and ask. I know it was great.
And I think there's still a lot of female chefs here. It's just, you know, they're not as getting as much notoriety as before.
They didn't manage that passing of the torch thing very well, did they?
No.
Ah, dear. Well, let's talk food. Let's talk. Do you know your menu by heart?
Yes.
Why don't you just, listeners love hearing descriptions of dishes. Could you explain a few of your favorites?
Sure. I mean, the first one that I recently put on was the house cured Loch Duart salmon. And we cured in brown sugar and basil and lemon zest for 30 hours. And then we sliced it really paper thin, and we serve it with English cucumber, sugar snap pea, English pea salad with preserved lemon vinaigrette and creme fraiche and some mint chiffonade. So
that
it's a really
good
light salad.
Fresh. Yeah.
Another favorite is the pan-fried veal sweetbreads.
Oh, that's Peter's favorite thing.
It's one of my favorite organ meats. It's just because it's, you know, it's very tasty, but it's not so overwhelming that it's scary. And I think it appeals to a lot more people than like a liver would or brains.
Had, earlier today we had pig's heart and tripe, fried tripe, and beef tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think I'll try something a little different for dinner here.
A little done on the organs.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there a secret to this sweetbreads thing? Because every time I make them, they're like rocks.
Oh, you know, I think if you soak them for at least a couple hours, 24 hours, 48 hours.
Oh, that long. See, I've never soaked them that long.
Yeah, just to get the impurities out and then just poaching them for about 7 minutes. Or so, a few minutes. And then really like pan fried. I like pan fried sweetbread. So I like the crispy exterior with like the kind of creamy interior.
And you've got skate wing, which is
skate
one of my
wing.
Favorites.
I love skate wing. It's just a great, it just has such a different texture than any other fish that I.
Oh, yeah, isn't it?
You know,
great, huh?
Yeah, it's so great. And, you know, especially pan fried. So it's kind of crispy on the outside. So.
I even like it in France where they do it with the cartilage still in it.
Oh, yeah.
And they stew it for hours or whatever they do with that.
Yeah, braised.
Yeah, the braised is what.
Yeah. There's a Korean soup that uses skate wing, and it's really spicy, and it has like a really bitter greens in there as
really?
Well. So it's now, really good.
Do any of your Korean influences, or even any of the Far East influences, penetrate this menu?
Not that much.
Yeah, I don't see anything much.
I would say
it.
I try to steer clear from it to kind of get another identity. So I wasn't just completely pigeonholed into the Asian, contemporary Asian cuisine.
What things are you looking to do that you've never done before?
With my menu?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to, I think I'm still trying to figure out my voice because I have only been doing this cuisine again for the last few months. For the last 3 years, I was cooking all Asian, so it's all really, everything is back to being new and exciting for me and just different. And so I'm just kind of figuring everything out still, I think.
Yeah. And what about with your life? What?
With my life, oh yeah, if only.
Do you have a life?
Not yet, soon. Soon, I definitely need the balance of life. I need to have my free time away from the restaurant, and
that's doubly hard for women.
It is, I think, just for anybody in the who works in the kitchen. I think it's really hard to figure out a good balance of life and, you know, playtime, and I definitely want to travel, and so I'm just waiting to get this off the ground, and then once everything gets in its place, everything will kind of just keep on going without me.
Well, you sound just so laid back and calm, although I know you're too energetic to be that. But it's certainly been a delight talking to you.
Thank you.
I know you're going to be doing different things, so you have to keep us posted.
Oh, I will, definitely.
Great. Well, thank you again, and I can't wait to see what you're going to feed us.
I hope you enjoy it.
Thanks, Michelle. Well, we covered a lot of miles and a lot of meals. That's my new slogan.
A lot of miles and a lot of meals. Okay, well, your usual slogan at this time of the program is...
Bye-bye.